The recordings are started.
The recordings are started.
Great. Thank you so much, Kevin. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group call on the 6th of March, 2017. In the interest of time today, the call, as we have quite a few participants online. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you're only on the audio bridge today, would you please let yourself be known now? Great, thank you. And as a reminder to all participants, please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. And also please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the call back over to Aria Doria.
Thank you. This is Aria speaking. Thank you, Michelle. Okay, so this meeting is now beginning. The first thing is to go through the agenda, and the agenda is posted on the right in the box called Notes 5 for anybody. The agenda will first, then we'll go through the SOIs, check and see if anybody has an update. Going to ask for work track updates, but only updates, not reports. So if a work track has nothing to add, want to basically move through it. Because the next item, the community comment to continuing the first reading, is the main purpose for this call, with the call tomorrow being the second meeting, so that we'll have a document to take with us to the meeting in Copenhagen. And then any other business. Does anybody have any other business at this point that they'd like to see added to it? Okay, I'm told I can barely be heard, so I will work on my volume later. For now, I'll hold the microphone in front of me. Okay, so the agenda can go as written, and want to mention SOIs. Does anybody an interest update that they need to make at the moment? I see no hands, so I'll assume that there are none. Just remind everybody that if the material conditions of your ICANN-related outside activities change, you need to make a modification to your SOI. Okay, moving on to the work track updates. Work track one. Do you have any updates that you need to make to the full meeting? I see Krista is typing. No update. Okay. I see more typing. Okay. Moving on to work track two. Either Michael or Philip, is there an update? Yes, Michael, I see your hand.
Hi, Aubrey. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, good. So there is no update per se. I mean, we've been continuing our meetings per the schedule. We recently I believe we started on the, I'm sorry, so it's in my mind, but our last meeting looked at the closed generics. That's right. Closed generics. That, and we will be continuing our weekly calls per the schedule without looking at CC2. Of course, that's what today is for. So we hope to see everyone in Copenhagen. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I see two things. I see that Kavus is hearing distorted audio. I am not sure what we can do about that. And also, Krista did post a note in the chat right after I said there was no comment, basically asking if everyone could review the updates and the questions, remembering that we went through the CC2 for Work Track 1 at the last meeting. That would be great. Okay, so Work Track 3,
Any updates to make? Yes, Karen, I see your hand, please.
Hi, Aubrey. This is Karen Day for the record. Warp Tribe 3 has a meeting tomorrow at 1500 UTC. Robin Gross will be leading that meeting. I will not be available during that time, but we will be continuing our work on the string-related issues, confusion, objections, and similarity, and we'll be introducing the topic of community issues, community priority evaluation, community-based objections. So I would encourage everyone that is available at 1500 tomorrow to join in that conversation. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Karen. Okay. Work Track 4, I'm looking at the chat, but seeing discussions over caps versus non-caps. So, Cheryl, please.
Thanks, Avery. Cheryl Langdon, off the record. I hope you can hear me and it's not distorted. Work Track 4 held its meeting about 4 hours ago, in fact, and the topic of our conversation was indeed name collisions. And we managed to resolve one or two of our questions towards recommendations, but have tabled another two. So we're still continuing our work on name collisions, and we'll come back to those slightly more complicated matters to discuss. But our next meeting, of course, will be when we gather in Copenhagen. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Karen, I see your hand still up. Is that for further comment or a remainder? Thank you. Okay, so we've been through the work track updates. I thank you very much for the with which you did those. And at this point, I would like to turn the floor over to Jeff, who will continue our march through the CC2 questions in this first reading. The floor is yours, Jeff.
Thank you, Aubrey. This is Jeff Newman. Hopefully my voice is okay, and at least you can hear me, and I'll look at the chat to see if there's any problems with it. I'm seeing yes, good. So I got some good news and bad news. Good news is we only made it through question one the last time. But the good news is that question one was almost half the number of pages. So our goal today will be to get through numbers two, three, and four, the work tracks two through four, the questions that relate to them. And then tomorrow, we have our ecologist to remind everyone to basically do the second reading of these questions. So again, please keep the questions, if you could, to ones asking about clarification on the questions. We're trying not to develop answers to these questions, but just to make sure that, I'm hearing a little bit of an echo, but we're just trying to make sure that the questions are clear and that they will be clear enough for others to answer, even if they're not as familiar with the subject matter. Okay, with that said, let's start with number 2.1, which deals with the base registry agreement. Again, this all relates to work track 2, which are the legal and regulatory requirements. Question number 2.1.1. Sorry, Karen's saying she can't understand me. And the audio is very scratchy. I'm going through Adobe. If it's better, I could try to dial in as well. Okay. Krista says it's clear there.
Sometimes it doesn't.
So should I?
Yeah, why don't you do a quick.
A quick call?
I'll have both set up. Yep, and then you'll have both set up.
I think there'll be an echo, though, if that happens. All right.
Right, not if you only use one at a time.
Okay, give me a minute, Aubrey, if you want to start, and I'll dial in.
Okay, so we were just about to start with the base registry agreement on Work Track 2, and there were questions related to that. So question 211, and I'm not going to read them out, were there any clarifications that needed to be made on question 211? Okay. I hear none. I do want to point out that we have a numbering issue because I just noticed there is no 2.1.2. So we probably should either make sure that we haven't lost a question or correct the numbering. So someone can check to make sure that we didn't actually lose a question. But hearing no questions on 211 and saying, okay, yes, Michael says some have been deleted, which I knew, but we probably should adjust the numbering after this. And, okay, thank you. Okay, moving on to 213, where there were no clarification questions. And thank you all for not offering solutions to the question. 213, were there any comments on that? Restrictions pertaining to sunrise periods. Okay. I see no hands. I see no questions. I will move on to 214, which had some comments on the form, on the document, and such. So are there any issues to be brought in 214? One of the issues we had was one comment that said, I think this needs to have examples. And then, for instance, the mission and purpose of the TLD should be part of registry agreement, and thus cannot change over time. And Mike responded to that, saying that he did not think that was the intention of the question originally. So are there any comments on that? Do we need examples in 2.1.4? Or can it stand as it is? And is Raymond here to speak to his issue? No. Yes, I do. I do. So would you like to speak to the comment you put in? I hear nothing. Oh, I see you typing. Okay, I will wait a second for typing. I don't know if Jeff is back yet. Oh, I see Jeff. I can't connect to the audio right now. Okay. So that means you're not actually hearing, or you just can't speak. You must be hearing, otherwise you wouldn't have answered me. Stupid question. Okay. You can type in the chat if you're fine with Michael's answer or whether you think that we really do need to add examples to this one. And does anybody else have a viewpoint on this? Okay, Raymond says he's fine with the answer at this point. So unless there are other comments on that, we can leave that one as it is for now. Any other comments on 214? Jeffrey, are you back?
I am back. Is
okay.
This better?
Nope. Then we'll move to your names.
Hello, I am back. Is
it's okay. How do people... Yeah, now it's not as scratchy, but you sound like you're in an echo chamber.
I guess
are you
I
on a speakerphone or on a phone?
I'm on a speakerphone.
I hope you win. Okay, what do other people think? Are they fine with the sound of Jeff? Yeah, he sounds like he's at a water bowl. Ken Stubbs says, this is not good. It's Alexander had already commented.
All right, let me try this way.
Okay, we got your point, Alexander. So go back to your previous.
go back to the is this better now?
Caboose has his hand up. Yes, Caboose.
Yes. Do you hear me, please? Do you hear me?
Yes, I hear you just fine, Caboose.
Yeah. Thank you very much. 214, there are a lot of questions, but is not very clearly drafted. They may be coherent, but they may be separate from each other. They are long sentences, and it would be difficult to properly understand. For instance, when they say application from a state, what do you mean by a state? Application, so second line, from a state, which portions of the applications are expected B? What do you mean by B? I expect to be or not be. Be incorporated. So it's not very clear. It needs some refinement. And I don't understand what they mean by a state. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I think what they're saying is, should the application form state or say or indicate which portions of the application are expected to be incorporated into the signed registry agreement? So, yes, the absence of the two on the B might be confusing, and maybe the word state in its meaning as explain or say is not the most common meaning of state for every reader. So I can understand. So perhaps editing that sentence to say, should the application form explain which portions of the application are expected to be incorporated into the signed registry agreement. So certainly, okay, making a look through this one, if changes are made between application and executing the registry agreement, how should this be handled? If changes are made after executing, how should this handle? Those questions all seem very straightforward and clear. Let me look at the last one. If a change like this were contemplated, how could a balance be to properly consider an applicant's attestations in their application versus allowing an applicant to make adjustments to their registry? That one possibly could use a little restructuring. One of my rules of thumb is, if I can read it without tripping, then it's okay. If I trip, then it may need some more punctuation or splitting. So, but, okay, yes, Caboose, your hand is still up.
Yes,
or is that a new instantiation?
No, first, small editorial, in the last but one line, there are two V. So one of them should be deleted. V, community.
Thank you.
So we don't need two V, T-H-E, one of them. And then I don't understand what you mean by, could a balance be a stock between, are we saying balance between the made, balance between established, balance with the, with what? A stock. What do you mean by a stock? Between the community,
okay.
the community to properly consider, between the community and what is the other party? When we say between, we need to have two parties, between various organs of communities, between various constituencies of communities, between various entities of communities. So when we say between communities, we should mention who are the two sides. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I think that you have demonstrated well some of the problems with this sentence. Balance be struck is indeed idiomatic speech, and that is, could a balance be found, and then it's offering two things, between one thing, allowing the community to properly consider an applicant's attestations, and that's a difficult word perhaps, in applicant. And then, on the other hand, the balance of allowing an applicant to make adjustments to their registry. So those are the two things that are being balanced, and that is the question. So balance be struck is indeed idiomatic English that may, or perhaps idiomatic, I mean, I don't know, that could be difficult for people. And that. So, okay, so this sentence is marked to need a little bit of wordsmithing for clarity. And thank you very much for that. Michael?
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly comment. Basically, I understand that these questions can be rather wordy sometimes, but we've grouped them individually, mainly because they're related to each individual topic. This itself, it deals strictly with, you know, incorporating the application into the registry agreement, having those linked, and then it deals with the aspect of whether or not some applicants did change the registry, did change their application. But just to keep those together, I think some of the suggestions received here, we could probably maybe have less words in there and make it a bit clearer cut. I think Paul's already given some suggestions about how we can do that, so we'll take that back. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Caboose, yes, please.
Yes, another small editorial. We have 214, and that will become 23. Where is 22? Do we have 22 or do we have to renumber? Thank you.
I think that is another artifact of the editorials and the removal of certain questions, and we're going to do the numbering after. I think it makes sense to have left the numbers that they were before so that people who were writing comments did not get confused between that. But before we have the second reading, I do believe that there needs to be a renumbering pass. Thank you for pointing it out. Am I continuing on this, Jeff, or are you ready to jump back in?
Jeff, I can jump back in, but I'm not sure if everyone can hear my connection. So I'll have to wait and see.
So loud and fine.
Yes, okay. Well, I will continue unless I hear others that can't. Okay, but thanks. All right, thank you, Aubrey, for taking it from that my issues are worked out. We're on 2.3, which we estimate will be 2.2, but for now we'll just call it 2.3 because that's what it says. This is on reserve names. Are there any questions with respect to 2.3.1 and 2.3.2? What we're going to do is we're going to have links in the actual questions, so we just need to remind ourselves to put links in there with the title of the section so that the question's a little bit more clear. But we couldn't put, because the sections are so long, I didn't want to copy the entire sections in there. So, Kavut.
Hello?
Yes, please.
Yes, I'm very sorry. Please forgive me. The Swiss telecommunication line is one of the best in the world. I hear you very, very badly. Please do not say that my line is not good. The line between here and the Adobe connection is good, but perhaps your line does have some distortion. I very hardly and barely understand the good points that you have made, so I cannot follow that. Having said that, this is now to Avery. There is a need to check all these cross-references to previous sections of application guidebook. I have no problem. It is not before me, but someone before the second reading may need to check these reference sections that properly correspond to what really meant. But once again, I'm sorry, I hear the last speaker with too much distortion. I apologize to say that, but that is the case. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. And yes, one of the things Jeff had said was indeed that the URLs needed to be added and that the references needed to be checked. Okay. Oh, dear.
So this is Jeff again. I'm hearing mixed comments, but some people can hear me, some people can't. I'm not sure what to do. When I get on the phone, people on Adobe can't hear me well. When I get on Adobe, people on the phone can't hear well. I'm not sure.
Yeah. What happens is on the Adobe, I can hear you fine, but there is a slight distortion. So I can understand how, that I'm through Adobe Connect, so therefore it's only distorted once,
people listening on the phone may have a complexity of distortion. And when using the speakerphone, it was really far too soft and in the fishbowl. So I guess since I'm clear, I don't know whether it's just simplest if I just continue forward with a tear in my eye and I'll be hearing from people that distortion over the phone is significant. So while those of us on Adobe Connect are able to understand, I guess it's bad. And Paul has been humorous in his response. I'm on the phone and it sounds like the Klingons are jamming Jeff's frequency at the source. So I guess I'll continue talking through this while Jeff, I don't know whether you can use a phone with a headset and not a speakerphone or something else, but I understand the problem. I have tended to reboot whenever I've had these kinds of problems, and sometimes it has helped. Okay, so should I continue? Okay, he's going to try cell, and I'll continue going through in the meantime. Okay, so we're fine on 231 and 232. We move to 233, the special use domains, which basically does have a note to it, which says, after a little discussion, Raymond Zylstra came up with a clearer question. I think this better addresses how the special domain issue needs to be considered in regards to reserved names. My question is this that clearer question?
This is the clearer question.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Cavus.
Yes, the substance is clear, but the way the question is drafted is not clear. First of all, it seems to me that there is some linguistic problem in fourth line or third line when we say when reserving certain names is appropriate. What does it mean is appropriate? When reserving the name is appropriate, what does it mean? If the reservation is appropriate, and then the message is not very clear. It's very difficult to understand what we meant by that. So, first of all, please can be clear whether if in that line is a proper word, or whether we say as appropriate, or we have to revert the sentence if the reservation is appropriate. So the way the sentence is drafted is very complex, and the idea of the whole question is not very clear. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Cavus. Yes, I tend to see the question as quite clear, but I know the IETF procedures quite well. I think the question is basically saying that there is a 6761 procedure in the IETF, and they will reserve a name when it is appropriate according to their procedure. Is appropriate is indeed a correct usage as far as I understand. However, I do agree with you when that last reserve for special use by IETF and the procedure for doing so, that last clause might be dangling there. So this one too needs 10.
Can you hear me all right, Aubrey?
I can hear you all right.
We're running into some serious inefficiencies as a result of communication. A perfect example is the interaction you just had with Cavus. You answered his comments as if everybody in the room understood what they were. So your comments referring back to him were essentially meaningless to many of us because we couldn't hear what he said originally. I have only one suggestion to make, and that is you should require an ICANN tech to monitor this call the next time, because we have somewhere between 30 and 50 people, and it's creating an inefficiency. It's certainly not your or Jeff's, the way you're managing this, it's causing this. It's purely technology, but it's very, very frustrating. Thanks for hearing me out.
Thank you. And I second your comment about it being very, very frustrating. Okay, so I understood that while there may be issues with the wording on this one, that there were no actual issues with the question itself. And so I think on these where there is a wording problem or a wordsmithing, I think just to indicate the sections that are unclear, and then those of us that will be doing wordsmithing between now and tomorrow can try to fix that. And I do, by the way, second and ask the staff members who can, whether it's Steve or Julie or Michelle, to try and get someone to help us get clear Adobe Connect sessions. So if I can move on, we will mark this one as a wordsmith pass. One thing I recommend to every editor is if you can't read it out loud, then it probably needs work. Okay. Yes, Cavus, I see your hand.
Yes, the last portion of this we started, should special use domain names be added to the applicant guidebook section on reserve names at the top level to prevent applicants and so on and so forth. Could we re-section this? Do you believe that this special should be added instead of should this be added? Because should might have different applications. Should sometimes is conditional, should time sometimes is if. So what do you mean by that? Do you ask them the question and requesting a reply, requesting a comment on that? If that is the case, at the end, you should ask, if yes, please explain or please explore. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think, do you think, is a fine substitution for that confusing word, should. Okay. Any other issues? This one? Okay, and I see Jeff editing. Have you reconnected, Jeff?
I have reconnected. I'm not sure if this is any better. I'm not sure if it's any worse. But this is what I generally use.
It's better to me. How is it for the people on the phone? Could you hear Jeff clearly just then, if a bit softly?
Well, I was told I was being too loud. So
and I got a check from Cheryl, who was one of the people that was having problems. Now I hear that you're fuzzy, but I hear that you're much better.
Gigi says I'm fuzzy, and other people are saying good. So I'm not sure what's going on with this whole system.
You're the clearest you've been. You sound a lot better. Let's try and have you start with 235 again. And if it fails like one more time, I'll just take it the rest of the way through.
Thank you. Sorry, Aubrey. It was my intent.
That's quite all right.
to do this. Okay. So I'm trying to be a little bit quieter because I was told I was being too loud. So I'll monitor. So 2.3.5 talks about the 100 names that a registry operator is allowed to reserve for operation or promotion of the top-level domain, and that a registry operator is also able to reserve an unlimited amount of names, which they can release through an ICANN accredited registrar. So there's a question in here where the question really is, do you believe changes are needed to a registry operator's right to reserve domain names, should be plural, and if yes, what changes are needed and why? If not, why not? And we have a comment in here that says, It is very confusing for a registrant when he is offered to order a domain name because the domain name is available to register at an accredited registrar to find out it cannot be registered for an unknown reason. This case is a common one with premium names. For this reason, the sometimes huge list of reserved names should be made public. So it goes on. So that's change one, dealing with solutions, and change two says delays in validating TLDs have forced new gTLD projects to end. So what I would say with these are they are more answers than they are changes to the question. So unless anyone believes otherwise or thinks that we should change the question or add questions, I'm not going to revise the question to refer to this, but encourage John to put this in his response. Caruth, you have your hand up.
Yes. My question is that what was the basis of this 100 names to be reserved, and what is the basis that unlimited number to be reserved, and do they also contains, for instance, the CCTLD at the second level, because it concerns the geographical name. So I am just seeking clarification when we say unlimited. Why this such an unlimited number was put in the applicant guidebook? And what is the basis of 100 and not 120 and not 80? Where this 100 comes from? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Caruth. Ken, do you want to answer this question, or do you have another question?
No, this is this question only for the time being, yeah.
Okay, so for this question, Caruth, the right came from the registry agreement. And, you know, it was not policy initially. It was something that was negotiated into one of the many drafts of the registry agreement, which was eventually put into the applicant guidebook. I'd have to go back to see in what draft that came about. But specification 5 is what has the language to allow 100 names for operational or promotional use, and there is no limit on reserving any other names subject to releasing them through an ICANN accredited registrar, and that's also in specification 5.
It seems that this 100 and unlimited could not be used by any other person or any other entity because they are reserved. In my opinion, reserving something is very healthy of the TLD. Why this possibility will be given to have unlimited number reserved, that means depriving or preventing others to use those? Is it not a sort of the warehousing of the TLDs that registries could have to touch reservations of unlimited, let's say 1,000 or 2,000? It depends on the wishes of the people and ambitions. Or perhaps the question that would be, do you believe that still these numbers, 100 for the special case and unlimited for the general case, need to be reviewed and to be determined to have some logic? So couldn't we amend the questions to address this issue? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Carlos. I think your response is really goes to the heart of an answer as opposed to a question. So I would think that would be something you might consider responding to this question. And perhaps maybe in Copenhagen, a few of us could talk to you about why that's in there. But I think if we could probably spend an entire call talking about responses to this question because it's a pretty large topic.
Thank you.
Thanks, Klaus. Ken, you had your hand up. Did you want to ask a question? Nope. Okay. So then moving on, to number 2.3.6, noting that an amendment to the registry agreement has been proposed, do you believe that reserve names at the second level as proposed by the recent proposed amendment should be applied to policy? Now I'm reading through that question and I'm not sure I understand. So Michael, do you, can I call on you to just explain this question? Because this one, as I was reading, it sounded a little confusing to me.
Sorry about that, Jeff. This is written rather hastily in my, sorry, hastily because I didn't have much time. But basically, the recent proposed registry agreements are looking at reserving a few other names for technical reasons, I believe. I think ICANN-SLA-monitoring is one of them for ICANN's, I think for ICANN's benefit for actually looking at through all the SLA monitoring. Not sure, they haven't really paid a lot of attention, but I caught that when we were going through the changes. So I think there are a few, there might be more than one of them, but that was just kind of put in there as a last minute question.
Okay, Carlos?
Yes, would it be possible when you say that by the recent proposed amendment, cross-reference that amendment. What amendment is that? That the readers that are not very familiar with what you mean, they just could trace the recent made amendment to give the reply. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Kavula. So if I understand Michael's question, this question really relates to at one point, about a year ago, I guess, ICANN had come to the registries and said that it wanted to use a second-level domain so that it could monitor certain service levels within the registry, particularly within the shared registration services. So I think if we reword the question, I'm trying to think, Michael, of what you want to ask here, saying that, should ICANN have a right to reserve additional names?
No, Jeff, basically it's to make, to basically we put in policy now what's going to be put in the agreement in just a few months, technically. By the time before our policy review ends or our PDB ends, the registry agreement, should the registry agreement changes, if approved, of course, will actually include some of these new reserve names. So I just wanted to make sure that we're able to include in policy what comes out in the new registry agreement. Does that make sense?
Not entirely, but I might be the only one missing it. Avery, do you understand? Or ICANN, are you able to reword the question? So Rubens has put a link to the proposed amendment.
I think we should take this back and reword it for a second reading. I think we've gotten some indication, and let's mark this one down for clarification, rewording, and that's back in the second reading.
I think that's a great idea. I think it's a great idea.
We have used 45 minutes so far, and we're still on page 12. So,
okay, we'll move quicker. Here we go. 2.4 deals with registrant protections. The first one is a question on the emergency backend the emergency backend registry operator, the continued operations instrument, data escrow requirements, and registry performance spec. They're required regardless of the type of top-level domain. And so the first question asks, are there any types of registries that should be exempt from these requirements? If so, why do you believe the above programs still serve their intended purposes? And then it asks what changes, if any, might be needed. to these programs if an RFP pre-approval program were to be developed. Are there any questions on that one? Okay. Seeing none, I'll jump to the next one, which I know we have to renumber, so we'll take note of renumbering it to 2.4.2. But in a working group discussion, it became clear that the EBRO funding model requires review and potential modification. The current COI model is one that has proven to be difficult to implement for many registries, ICANN, and even financial institutions. Are there other mechanisms of funding EBRO providers other than letters of credit and or other continuing operation instruments? Any questions or comments on that one? Okay, great. 2.4.4, well, we'll fix the numbering again. But ICANN staff in its program implementation review report identified a number of challenges in performing background screening, particularly because there were many different types of entities to screen. An example, top 20 exchanges to newly formed entities with no operating history. And because information is not readily available in some jurisdictions, do you think that, the criteria, requirements, and or the extent to which background screenings are carried out require any modifications? Should there be any additional criteria added to future background screening? For example, would the previous breach by the registry operator and or any of its affiliates of a registry, should say registry operator, or any of its affiliates of a registry agreement or registrar accreditation agreement be grounds for ICANN to reject a subsequent application for a TLD by the same entity and or its affiliates? I know that's a mouthful. But hopefully you can understand the gist of that question. It's saying that are there any reasons for ICANN to deny a future application by an entity or its by that entity's affiliates if that entity breached the previous agreement with ICANN? Ken, you have a question.
Jeff, that opens up a can of worms there because they're going to have to get into significant definitions of what constitutes a breach. Do you consider all breaches, material breaches, something along that line? So I'm not really sure where I'm comfortable with the way it's currently worded right now. I think it's something that would be best surfaced with the either compliance or with the people who determine what constitutes breaches, because I'll be honest with you, I don't know whether the legal compliance side versus the technical compliance side is in effect the same department in ICANN anymore. Thanks.
Thanks, Ken. Kavuos.
Yes, in the fourth line of this paragraph, we say information is not readily available. Which information? And then he says that in some jurisdiction. What do we mean by in some jurisdiction? How many jurisdictions we are referring that in some jurisdiction this information is available, in some other jurisdiction this information is or are not available. What are these different types of jurisdictions that we say? In some of them, the information is available. In some of them, the information is not available. And what are those information which are available or are not available? It is above mentioned information. It is what information? Thank you.
Thanks, Carlos. I think that refers to, and someone from ICANN staff can jump in, but the jurisdiction there means that in some countries, it was easier for ICANN staff to find the background screening information on entities or people than it was in other countries. And so the question here is, or it's alluding to the fact that it was not always possible to do background screening if the entity applying for a TLD was in a jurisdiction or a country that did not provide that kind of operating history or background. So I think that's what this question is getting at.
So could we add the country, in some countries, jurisdiction, or in jurisdiction of some countries? Is it possible to add that?
Yeah, I think, Avery, this is Jeff, I think that makes sense that we could add it. I don't see any reason why we couldn't change jurisdiction in the country. But unless someone knows something I don't and wants to jump in, I think that's fine. Okay? And to just respond to Ken, I think, Ken, I think your comment is good. I just think it's more of an answer to the question. So it's something that you should put in, you know, or you want to put in an answer talking about the difficulties of affiliates and what is a breach and all of that. But I think this issue is something that's in our it's in the report, so I think we do need to ask the question. There are some comments in the chat that say that jurisdictions could also mean individual states, like in the U.S., within countries. But I think, just to respond to Rubens and Michael, I think that even though states have different rules, I think it's pretty uniform in terms of the background information that ICANN is able to get. But let's take that back and see if we can maybe reword it as Michael has suggested to provide the flexibility. Okay? Jumping on to 2.6, which actually should now be 2.5, this is the fun topic of closed generics, which we have just started in WorkTrack 2. And 2.6.1 refers to, well, it says in the 2012 round, the operation of a TLD where the string was considered, in quotes, generic, could not be closed to only the registry operator and or its affiliates. Originating from GAC advice on the subject, this rule was promulgated by ICANN's new GTLD program committee of the ICANN board, but was never adopted as a policy by the GNSO. This rule was subject to public comment and input from the community. Should this rule be enforced for subsequent application windows, why or why not? Any questions on that one? Okay, not seeing anyone. 2.6.2, do you have suggestions on how to define generic in the context of new GTLDs? It is currently defined as, and I will note that we need to insert the provision from the agreement so that it's in there. Are any modifications needed to the definition? If so, what changes? If the exclusion of closed generic TLDs is to be maintained, are there any circumstances in which an exemption to the rule should be granted? Any questions on that one? Okay, not seeing any questions. Oh, no, Kavuos.
Yes, my question is, why you raise this question? Do you have a doubt about the definition of the generic top-level domain that you want that we redefine that?
No, sorry, that was, yeah, Kavua, sorry about that. That's, I drafted the question, but I did not have the definition right in front of me. So it was a note to myself to insert that definition, and I just did not get around to it. So I will certainly do that for the second reading. It will be the provision that's contained in specification 11 of the registry agreement.
Excuse me, the question is not clear. The first part you say that do you want to define generic, and you continue with that saying that it's currently defined as. So do you want that there is a definition currently for generic? You want to see whether this definition to be revised. Is that the question? So perhaps you should start that currently for generic GTLD, there is a definition, and then do you want that this definition be retained or modified, and if yes, why and how? Is it the question? Thank you.
Yes, Carlos, I see what you're saying, because it seems like the first question is asking the same thing as the second. So I think we could put that in the reword. I think we can eliminate the first sentence of 2.6.2, or the first question, and then just say that currently the term generic is defined as, and then have the questions follow that. I think
yes,
that might make it more clear.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else on generic, closed generics? Okay, moving ahead to 2.7. According to Section 3, this is for the applicant terms and conditions. This is Module 6 of the applicant guidebook. So according to Section 3 of the applicant terms and conditions, ICANN retains the right to determine not to proceed with any and all applications or delegate any TLDs in the root zone. Do you think that ICANN should be limited in their discretion to the confinement of policy, the applicant guidebook, and the security and stability of the Internet when determining whether or not an application should proceed? If yes, please explain. Anyone have any questions or comments on this one?
This is Aubrey. I don't know why they only have to explain if yes. I think it's a please explain would be sufficient there.
Thanks, Aubrey. I agree with that. Paul, yes.
I think the question, Paul McGrady for the record, I think the question begs itself as if somehow the status quo is it can, you know, the ICANN can violate policy because of this paragraph, and do we want them to stop violating policy? You know, I think a reasonable position could be that this paragraph doesn't allow them to do that, and we're not seeking a change in the status quo. In other words, the question's loaded, and I'd like for us to look back at it and see if we can make it more neutral. Thanks.
Okay, Paul, is that something you can – I'll go to Michael, but maybe he's got a comment on that. But maybe, Paul, if you could think of a way we can do that, greatly appreciate it. Because if it is loaded, then you're right. We should make it more neutral.
Well, I think the question itself, if you look at the sorry, Michael, let me hear it for the record. The section of the applicant terms and conditions itself is very clear in the fact that it pretty much gives ICANN pure arbitrary or discretion when deciding whether or not applicant proceeds. It doesn't give the assumption that ICANN is subject to policy. Of course, I believe they are, but at the same time, ICANN also has the ability to make changes to the applicant guidebook. So in that sense, I think that this question itself is talking about whether or not we should limit ICANN to at least to be more so defined, more so confined to that policy, to have it stated exclusively rather than giving ICANN free domain in regards to making such a decision.
So this is Paul. Could I respond to that?
Yes, please.
So, I mean, I think that it's one interpretation of this paragraph, but it's adrift from the rest of the guidebook, which says the guidebook will be in a final form and only extraordinary changes will be made. There are all kinds of other things in the guidebook making reference to policy and how policy developed by the Gina Soap Council applies in this context. I understand that that's what's being proposed is one reading of this paragraph, but I don't think that either under simple methods of contractual language construction that any court would look at, nor in the text of the guidebook, nor in the way that the community operates, that this was ever meant to be a blank check for ICANN, the corporation, to violate policy when it implemented the new GTLD program. So I think we have a fundamental disagreement on that point. I still think the question can be unloaded and asked more neutrally, and I'm happy to help work on that. But I don't necessarily want to buy the fiction that this was a blank check, because I don't think that it is. Thanks.
Well, just to let me, Jeff, just let me respond really quickly. And Jeff, sorry, and Paul, I agree with that in a sense. But reading it as it is, I think that interpretation can be achieved. I mean, that interpretation that it is kind of a blank check can be made. I think, can we go to the rest of the applicant terms and conditions? I think that those sections of the applicant terms and conditions, these three sections, work very strongly together in a lot of the recent, you know, legal battles that ICANN has been in with a certain number of applicants. But that is, the changes to the applicant guidebook also is addressed here in the applicant terms and conditions. So I think rewording these to have be a bit more neutral is a great idea, but I think we need to take all three of them together and try to look at how those changes should be made.
Okay, let's
mind check and let people know that we're more than an hour into the meeting. Thank you.
All right, let's move on. We've got Paul's comment, and I've noted it, so we will try to make it more neutral. 2.7.2 goes on and asks about the covenant not to sue, and it says that an applicant for, according to Section 6, an applicant foregoes any right to sue ICANN once an application is submitted for any reason. However, the new GTLD program does not currently provide an appeals mechanism for ICANN decisions other than through the accountability mechanisms, and none of which go to the substance of the ICANN decision. Do you think that the new GTLD program should be required to include an appeals mechanism for applicants to challenge the decisions of the ICANN staff, ICANN board, and or any entities delegated decision-making authority over the assignment, contracting, and delegation of new GTLDs before including a covenant not to sue in the applicant terms and conditions? If yes, please explain. That's a word, a mouthful as well. Paul, is your hand up? Is that an old hand or a new one?
It's a new hand.
Okay. Paul, please.
Yes. I think this is a very critical part of. Critical in the sense that we should be careful about the words and terms we use. Then in the second line, you say that any right to sue ICANN once an application is submitted. You mean the application submitted to be processed, or once everything is processed and the GTLD or the thing was delegated or the contract is made? Do you mean that at the first instance when an application is submitted by an applicant, you want to sue the ICANN? And that is not a good way to do that, because nothing has been yet been done ICANN. So when we sue the ICANN, when ICANN decide on the matter and delegate the issue, and then in that case we may sue the ICANN. This is one clarification. But this is not my question. My question is that when you say in addition or other than those foreseen in the accountability, do you mean that a parallel operation or additional operation than what is currently used in the accountability for any action to sue the ICANN, and why it is needed? Because in the CCWG Volcker 3.1, they have not considered such a thing other than reconsideration, and then if it is not yet reconsidered or is objected to be reconsidered, then we go and escalate the situation and may go to IRRP. So could you kindly come on by first, what do you mean by submitted, and second, why we need such additional measures than accountability? Are we competing with accountability mechanism, and why it is needed? Do you believe the accountability mechanism is not sufficient to do that?
and that is not sufficient because we have deliberately discussed and limited everything to that channel and not to have additional channels. Thank you.
Thanks, Carlos. I think the point of this question is that the accountability mechanism does not go to the substance of the decision made by ICANN, but really just a review of whether the decision violates the bylaws, which, again, does not go to whether ICANN staff or board or the evaluators were right in the decision that they made. So that's what this question is asking. So we'll take your question under advisement and look and see if we can make that a little bit more clear. Paul McGrady, your hand's up, but I have a feeling it might just be an old one.
Yeah, this is Paul. It's stuck, and I'm away from my computer, so I can't lower it. So please ignore it, other than to say that the fact that you just said that whether or not that ICANN violated its bylaws in rejecting an application could be reviewed goes back to my prior point that there is a universe of things out there that makes the paragraph about rejecting applications not a paragraph that lives in a vacuum.
Okay, thanks, Paul. All right, moving on to 2.7.3. According to Section 14 of the Terms and Conditions, ICANN has the ability to make changes to the guidebook. With the last round behind us, part of the task of this working group is to foresee predictability in future rounds. With this in mind, this provides new consideration to the necessity to make changes to the applicant guidebook once a subsequent procedure has been initiated. Do you think ICANN should be limited in their ability to make changes to the applicant guidebook once the application procedure has already been initiated? If yes, please explain. Carlos.
Yes, I'm sorry. I was not convinced of the 272 because what you mentioned is correct. But we should not devise something that contradicts or inconsistent with the CCWT accountability versus contained in the bylaw and whatever will be added to that. So perhaps we should add anything that you want, an additional measure, but you say that consistent with the bylaw. So we would not create something that not to be coherent to what? That we have done that, so this should be quite clear. Additional measure, yes, to clarify, to facilitate, but consistent with the bylaw, but not something which negates or ignore or not observe the bylaw. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Carlos. I've put in a note for us to go and somewhere insert that in. Sorry, I'm just typing that so we remember it. Okay. Any questions on 2.7.3? Okay, 2.7.4. Do you believe that any significant changes are needed in the terms and conditions to the applicant guidebook? If so, what are those changes and what is the basis or rationale for needing to do so? I think I'll use my prerogative to make a comment here and probably delete the word significant because that is subject to interpretation, and I think the question is, do you believe that any changes are needed? So I'm going to suggest that we take out the word significant. Okay, any comments or questions on that one? And, Aubrey, if there are things in the chat I'm missing, can you just keep an eye out? I know that there is a conversation going on.
Yeah, I am keeping an eye out. I just haven't seen. Yeah.
So I see that... Krista has just said that there might be an overlap between 2.7.3 and 1.3.1. So if we can look at that, and if there is overlap, just move it into one section. So we'll just put a note there. All right, moving on to 2.8. This deals with registrar non-discrimination and registry-registrar separation. These are difficult areas because we have not yet gotten to them. So really what we say here is the working group has not yet addressed the issues of registrar non-discrimination or registry-registrar separation, also known as vertical integration. Now that we have several years of operations of vertically integrated registries and registrars, what issues, if any, have you noticed with vertically integrated registries? Any questions or comments on that one? Okay, that seems pretty clear. 2.8.2, Specification 13 grants an exception to the Registry Code of Conduct, and specifically from the vertical integration restrictions. Are there any other circumstances where exemptions to the Code of Conduct should be granted? Okay, Michael, you have a question?
Never mind, I take that back.
Okay, no question from Michael. 2.8.3.
Oh. Actually, Jeff, I do have a question. Sorry.
Okay.
I read it a few different times, but it seems that this implies that the only possibility to have an exemption to the Registry Code of Conduct is Specification 13. I know that's not specifically. I know that's not the only exception, of course, but perhaps we get a bit more clarification there to note that there are other exceptions as well. From the Registry Code of Conduct.
Okay, I understand your question. So let's just drop a comment in there that says that we'll add the other ones in there. Sorry, that's me typing, and I know you can all hear that. Okay, Michael, I understand. All right, next one is 2.8.3. Some have argued that although we allow registries to serve as both as a registry and as a registrar, the rules contained within Section 2.9 of the Registry Agreement and in the Code of Conduct prohibit the integrated registry-registrar from achieving the economic efficiencies of such integration by not allowing a registry to discriminate in favor of its own registrar. Do those arguments have merit? If yes, what can be done to address those issues? If not, please explain. Any questions on that one? Let's give a second for people to type. Okay, not seeing any.
No. Okay, Phil's type.
Sorry, Aubrey, did you have a comment?
I just see that Phil is typing, that's all.
Okay. All right, well, I'll go on to the next one. If we have to come back, we'll come back.
He stopped typing, so. Right, he stopped typing, go ahead, sorry.
Okay.
So, Caboose got his hand up in time.
Caboose, thanks.
The last part of this, up to the fourth line, I have no problem. Do these arguments have merit? And then we continue to say that if yes, they have merit, what can be done to address those issues? What issues to be addressed? Non-discrimination against, in favor of the own registrar to be addressed? I mean, the text is not quite clear. What can be done to address those issues? What issues? Discriminations? What do you mean by address? Do you mean to enforce that? Do you mean to further enhance that? But do you mean to address that? Because address is a general word. It's already been addressed that they should not have any discrimination in favor of its own registrar. But do you want to enforce that? Do you want to further enhance that? So this is my question. The remaining part I have not. This is this portion. What can be done to address those issues?
Okay, so Kavuos, I think, yep, thanks for the question. I think the question is, or the argument, which is the premise of the question, is that the 2.9 of the registry agreement, although there was a decision to have vertical integration, many have argued that the efficiencies of vertical integration are not able to be achieved because of the code of conduct and some other requirements in the agreement. If you agree with that, then the question is, well, can we do anything about it? And, you know, what would ease the burden of, or what would allow a registry to achieve those efficiencies, I guess is the question. So we could take that back and kind of see if we can make it a little bit more clear.
Yes, thank you very much for the explanation. My problem is that this demonstrative adjective, these refer to what? That is my question. Thank you. When you say these issues, which issues to be addressed?
Okay, thank you, Carlos. I understand the question, and I put a note in the draft so we can address that. Okay, 2.10. We're getting there. 2.10 is on TLD rollout. The applicant guidebook basically says that applicants have to complete the contracting process in 9 months and the delegation process in 12 months. But the requirement only means that the contract needs to be executed and NIC.TLD be delegated. Are these timeframes reasonable? Is there a need? Is there still a need to have these requirements? Please explain. Any questions on that one?
There are not. I do have some comments on previous ones once this one's done.
Sorry, Aubrey. You're a little quiet, at least to me.
Yeah. Okay, so sorry. I don't have a comment on this one. There were comments in the chat. One, Phil had a comment about 281 that the wording is not correct in his opinion. And then Christina had a comment on the one we just discussed with Kavos of replacing the word issues with claimed inefficiencies. And then while I'm reading, Susan Payne just said, I think that on 283, we should also ask what safeguards are required.
Okay, thanks. And I see those are being added to the notes, so we can remember to add them to the text. Any other questions or comments? We are up to 2.11 at this point. Okay, 2.11, contractual compliance. Noting that the role of contractual compliance is to enforce the registry agreement and any changes to that role are beyond the scope of this PDP, the working group is not anticipating policy development related to this topic. The working group expects that any new contractual requirements would be made enforceable by inclusion in the base agreement. Do you agree with this approach? Any questions or comments on that? Okay, moving on. 2.12, global public interest. This is a tough area to ask about, but 2.12.1, the final issue report suggested that in considering the public interest, the working group think about concerns raised in GAC advice on safeguards, the integration of public interest commitments, and other questions around contractual commitments. And so we ask questions here. It says, have PICs served their intended purpose? If not, what other mechanisms should be employed to serve the public interest? Please explain and provide supporting documentation to the extent possible. And then I will note in the draft there is a comment from Jorge Cancio that states, I feel these questions should look for factual inputs. What facts can respondents present on the functioning of the PIC in serving the purpose? In addition, I think the CCT was also working on similar data, which should be taken into account. So I think by asking for supporting documentation, we're asking for facts. And I think the note on CCT is with respect to all of our work that we will be taking that into account. So let's see when we go back for the second reading if we need to address or change any part of that question. Christina has a comment saying, can we ask ICANN for facts, namely the outcome of any PIC-DRP proceedings? I think that's a good question, Christina, and it actually raises a good issue about whether we could have ICANN answer some of these questions. It doesn't necessarily just have to go to the community. If there are questions we think ICANN staff could answer, perhaps we should be thinking about asking ICANN staff to help us with this, too, to respond. Okay, the last question. Do you believe the public interest is adequately defined in the sphere of ICANN? Is there a specific definition that the working group might be able to leverage in establishing or adjusting protections?
Hello. This is in my opinion, a mission which is difficult. The question is very, very difficult. We tried several hours and hours to see what is the public interest. We could not reach any agreement. The only thing that if you want to refer to that, maybe, I don't know if you get something, but that is difficult, but I don't want to delete this question, but at least you should say that public interest as referred to in article of incorporation and in the bylaw, because over there are a specific area to which the public interest is referred to. We don't want to have a general definition of public interest because we failed to come to any agreed definition, and I don't think that this question will end to any improved situation to that. But I have no problem if you refer that public interest as referred to in article of incorporation and in the bylaw, I don't know whether it's the mission or whether it's the core value, limited to that understanding, but not the general definition of public interest, because it's quite difficult to have that. We tried many, many hours, and we did not succeed. Thank you.
Thanks, Kavala. So I think, with the new reference in the articles, I'm not sure we need to ask this question. So I think we'll take that back, take your comments, and perhaps even delete this question, because it is pretty broad and there is now a reference in the articles. All right, we've made it to Work Track 3, and I'm convinced that we can do this in 35 minutes, Work Track 3 and 4. These questions should be much more, I think these questions are pretty straightforward, so let's see if we can get through these. 3.1, deal with objections. Do you think that the policy recommendations, and there's recommendations that are linked, require any modifications? So these are the recommendations contained within the final report of the GNSL, which serve as the basis for most of the recommendations. Serve as the basis of most of the objections. Any questions on that one? Okay, 3.1.2. Do you believe that those recommendations, again, referring to the ones in 3.1.1, were implemented effectively and in the spirit of the original policy recommendation? 3.1.3. And if you have a comment, just a question, just raise your hand. I'll get to you. I know I'm kind of going fairly quickly. Do you believe there were any issues with standing requirements as defined in the applicant guidebook or as carried out by the providers? Okay, no comments, questions? 3.1.4. Do you believe there is evidence of decisions that were inconsistent with other similar objections, the original policy recommendations, and or applicant guidebook? Kavos.
Yes, when you say evidence of decision, which decision? Decision made by whom? This is what I put in my note. Have you referred to this decision earlier? And then you can say decision referred to in paragraph X above, or what decision you say that? As carried out, okay, as is evidence of decisions. Which decision? Made by whom? Or where it has been referenced? Or where it has been contained? So just clarifications.
Okay, thanks, Kavos. And I put a note in to basically it's decisions made by objection dispute panels.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. 3.1.5. Are you aware of any instances where any party or parties attempted to, quote, game the objection procedures in a 2012 round? If so, please provide examples and any evidence you may have available. We've heard that term game so many times in our discussion, so now we're asking for specific examples and evidence. Kavos, is that a new hand? Sorry.
A general question. In some of the questions, you have clearly mentioned, if yes, please explain. And so, in some other questions, you have not asked that one. Would it be possible that editorially, whenever you have not asked if yes or if no, please explore, just add that? Because it's not yes or no. If someone says yes, you should say why, and if someone says no, you should explore. So you add that one. If yes or no, please explore. It is just totally editorial, not in substance.
Okay, thanks, Kavos. I put that in this question, and we'll go through the document and make sure it's in there, in others. 3.1.6, do you believe that the use of an independent objector is warranted in future rounds? We should probably change that in future application windows. If not, then why? If yes, then would you propose any restrictions or modifications be placed on the IO in future rounds? Again, we'll change rounds to consistent terminology. Questions on that one? Okay, 3.1.7. Do you believe that parties to dispute should be able to choose between 1 and 3 member panels? And should the costs of objections reflect that choice? Is clearer guidance needed in regards to consolidation of objections? I might actually propose changing that to 2 different questions. So it would be 3.1.7 and a new 3.1.8. Because I think they are pretty different. Kavos, new hand or?
Yes, I don't recall exactly, but I think we have addressed this issue in Section 4 or in the Chapter 4 of the bylaw on the number of the panels if there are people opting for more number or more people, they should pay for the cost. I am not sure, but we have to check whether this has not been addressed. So we don't want to make a double question. The question is already been addressed in the bylaw. Just a checkpoint, that's all. No problem with the question. Question is valid, but I wonder whether it has been already addressed or not elsewhere. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Carlos. We'll take a look and see if this has already been asked and or pointed out. Many 3.1.8, which will now be 9 since we split the earlier one, many community members have highlighted the high cost of objections. Do you believe that the cost of objections created a negative impact on their usage? If so, do you have suggestions for improving this? And if, I'm sorry, are there issues beyond cost that might impact access by various parties to objections? Any questions on that one? Okay, 3.2, new GTLD applicant freedom of expression. 3.2.1, noting that the 2007 final report on new GTLDs tried to balance the rights of applicants, example Principal G, and the rights holders, so that's recommendation 3, do you believe that the program was successful in doing so? If not, do you have examples of where either an applicant's freedom of expression or a person or entity's legal rights were infringed? Comments, questions on that one? Okay, 3.3, community applications and community priority evaluations. As indicated in the implementation guidance of the 2007 final report, the claim by an applicant to support a community was intended to be taken on trust unless the applied for TLD is in contention with one or more TLDs, or is the respondent in an objection. As a result, the claim to support a community was only evaluated in community priority evaluation and community objections. Do you believe that the implementation and delivery of CPE was true to the policy recommendations and implementation guidance provided by the GNSO? If not, do you have suggested improvements to either the policy or implementation guidance or implementation? Any questions on that one? Okay, 3.3.2.
Alex, sorry.
Yep, Caboose.
Yeah, Alexander has typed in a comment, and Caboose has his hand up. Alexander's comment, like stated before, it seems there were problems with the CPE, so GAC several times called for an appeal mechanism to investigate potential inconsistencies. That seems like an answer, though, not a comment on the question. Perhaps I'm wrong, and Caboose has his hand up.
Yes, my question was, you have the term two. Do you mean effective? Do you mean positive? Because the issue was two, but whether it was effective or not. So just a clarification. What do you mean by two? Suits the policy. Thank you.
Okay, I'm just looking for that true. Okay. All right, we will look for that in there. Okay, 3.3.2. There is a general sentiment amongst many in the community that the CPE process did not provide consistency and predictability in the 2012 round. Do you believe this was the case? And if so, do you have examples or evidence of these issues? Questions, comments on that one? Okay, 3.3.3, CPE was one instance in the needs utility program where there was an element of a comparative evaluation, and as such, there were inherently winners and losers created. Do you believe there is a need for community priority or a similar mechanism in subsequent procedures? Do you believe that it can be designed in such a fashion as to produce results that are predictable, consistent, and acceptable to all parties to CPE? The genus of policy recommendations left the issue of a method for resolving contention for community claim names to board and the implementation. Do you believe that a priority evaluation is the right way to handle name contention with community applicants? Should different options be explored? If so, which options should be explored and why? Carlos.
Yes, I have no question on that, but I have a lot of sympathy with you. It is about 1 hour, 36 minutes that you are speaking. Perhaps if Avery, I apologize to her, to take some minutes to read the text and allow you to breathe, because you are talking and that makes you really tired. I have a lot of sympathy for you. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. I will I'll continue through section 3, and then if Avery wants to do 4, I will certainly let her jump in, but it's up to Avery.
Well, as I did the last one, and I'm scheduled to do tomorrow's, I will jump in anytime I need to, Jeff. You just tell me when you need me to jump in.
Okay. Thanks, Aubrey. Okay. Where were we? Oh, 3.3.5. Were the rights of communities, for example, freedom of expression, freedom of association, freedom of religion, and principle of non-discrimination. So the question is, were the rights of communities infringed by the new GTLD program? A difficult question, I know. All right, besides CPE, are there other aspects of the new GTLD program related to communities that should be considered in a more holistic fashion? All right, 3.4, we're getting there. Gain similarity.
There was one comment on 335. On 335, Heather asks whether we should ask for specific examples.
I agree with that, and I have put some words in there. But yes, I think we should. Okay, 3.4, string similarity. There was a perception that consistency and predictability of the string similarity evaluation needs to be improved. Do you have examples or evidence of, and the word issues is here, so we might have to reword that. If so, do you have suggested changes to the policy recommendations or implementation that may lead to improvement? For instance, should the standard of string confusion that the evaluation panel used be updated or refined in any way? So I'm going to put a comment in here. I think, and I'll ask Karen and Robin, if they're both still on, perhaps we could include as either a sub-question or another question, since we do have a proposal on the table, perhaps we might want to put that proposal out for comments in some way. So I'll leave that for Karen and Robin to think about, and I'll follow up with you both after this call to see if that's something we can include in this. Okay, 3.4.2. Should the approach for string similarity in GTLDs be harmonized with how they are handled in CCTLDs? So that's a question, Carlos, yes.
Yes, the question is correct, but the word "with" in between sounds a little bit awkward. Harmonize with, either harmonize with something or we delete with, and we say harmonize, and then how they can be handled. Because with in between the two break the essence of the both sentences. So we don't know why we need this with between the two, harmonize and how. Unless we harmonize with and then separate it by comma and then get how, so on and so forth. Thank you.
Thanks, Bruce. I think this question is basically saying, should the string similarity approach taken with GTLDs be the same as the approach taken for CCTLDs? I don't know if I said that backwards, but should the approaches be the same? I think it's a question. Maybe it's just a new word. So we have that note. Okay. 3.4.3.
Jeff, it's Christina. Can I get in the queue on that last question?
Yes, please.
Okay, and with apologies because I am no longer with Adobe, I have no earthly idea how the issue of string confusion and string similarity is handled in the CCTLD. So unless I think the question needs to be clear that what we're talking about is treating the issue the same, whether it's a GTLD or CCTLD, if that is in fact what we're saying. And then if to the extent that we want people to take into account how it's being handled in CCTLDs, we may have to tell them, because I don't know how many people actually would know off the top of their respective heads.
Yeah, thanks, Christina. I put in a note that we should, at the very minimum, have a link to the process that CCTLDs use. It actually came out fairly recently, the recommendations on how that should be handled. So I put in the notes that we should provide a link to the CCTLD process at a very minimum.
Thank you.
Thanks, Christina. And if anyone else is just on the phone, just jump in if you have a question, because all I can see is the Adobe chat room. Okay, 3.4.3. The working group and wider community have noted issues specifically related to singles and plurals of the same word. Do you have suggestions on how to develop guidance on singles and plurals that will lead to predictable outcomes? Would providing for more predictability of outcomes unfairly prejudice the rights of applicants or others? Kavuos.
Yes, no problem with the question, but I suggest that we have noted it have raised concerns because it's more than noted. In that we have serious difficulties with these hotels, and all of these things. So we should just replace noted with concerns or serious concerns. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Kavuos. I've put in some language. So now it says instead of noted issues, it now says have raised concerns. Okay. 3 points, and also I'm just going to read Heather's comment that it was Christina Rosette that raised the comment on 3.4.2. Think of the notes, it might say Heather. Or, sorry, I think it says Susan, so it should be Christina.
But Susan also made the point in the chat, though.
Ah, okay. Thank you, Aubrey. Okay, there's some discussion going on and a link on the CCTLD fast track process. So we'll put those in the notes and make sure to update the questions to have a link to that process. Okay, 3.4.4, do you believe that there should be some sort of mechanism to allow for a change of applied for TLD when it is determined to be in contention with one or more strings? If so, do you have suggestions on a workable mechanism? Okay, 3.4.5. Do you feel that the contention resolution mechanisms from the 2012 round, i.e. CPE and last resort auctions, met the needs of the program in a sufficient manner? And then we'll have a please explain as well.
So we have spoken about, you know, putting a top on some of this and just saying any place where you have examples, please use them as sort of one of the blanket statements. That's one of the suggestions that did come through. And you've got Paul McGrady with his hand up.
Okay, Paul, please.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Aubrey. Do we mean here in 3.4.5 the needs of the community or the needs of ICANN, the corporation? I don't know that a program can have needs. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Paul. I agree with that.
We also have a comment from Alexander. Schubert was asking whether we should add a question, should private auctions be prohibited or do they create harm, speculation, et cetera. I think that question is already sort of implied by saying did they meet the needs of the program in a sufficient manner. But Alexander does ask that question.
Let's just put a note in. I think we can ask a question that's not that the way Alexander asks it is a little bit it's not neutral, let's put it that way. So maybe we can ask or just note that there are many contention resolution sets were resolved through the use of private auctions. And then figure out a kind of neutral question to ask whether that's appropriate or not, or let's figure out a way to ask that question.
Yeah.
Okay, 3.5, accountability mechanisms. 3.5.1, do you believe that the existing accountability mechanism, and it's questions of request for reconsideration, independent review, and the ombudsman, so the question is, do you believe that the existing accountability mechanisms are adequate avenues to address issues encountered in the new GTLD program? So this one, I'll just put in a note. We need to make sure we're not overlapping with the question in section two, in work track two. So let's make sure we don't ask the same question twice, or if we're trying to get at a different angle here, let's make sure this only goes to that unique angle. Kavulos.
My question is that why we raise this question? This was extensively discussed at the CCWG. We have the process of reconsideration. We have ombudsman, we have independent review panel, and now you introduce something that appeal panel and so on and so forth, appeal approach, and still you're asking whether it was sufficient or it is sufficient or not, because it means that you put the bylaw to the second public comment. Is it necessary to cast some doubt on something that has gone through the three public comments and one final form, and approved by the community, approved by ICANN, approved by NTIA, and now implemented, and still we believe that this process is not sufficient? Are we not raising some question of redoing the whole thing? Because this process is contained in Section 4 or Chapter 4 of the new bylaw. It took considerable amount of time under Becky Berry. So why do you need to raise this question?
Kavulos, thanks for
the clarification.
Yeah, thanks, Kavulos. This is Jeff. So I think it's not asking whether there should be existing account or there should be additional accountability mechanisms. I think this is really asking whether there should be something other than just being able to go to the accountability mechanism. Should there be an appeals mechanism? For example, if an applicant did not like a decision by the string similarity panel, should there be a specific right of appeal that is not an accountability mechanism, but it's something else where an independent party could hear the appeal and make a decision on the substance? So I think that's what these questions are trying to ask. And I think if we harmonize them with the ones that are asked in Work Track 2, I think we'll be covered. So we're not, and maybe we could be more clear, we're not asking for additional accountability mechanisms or whether those accountability mechanisms are good. We're just asking whether there should be appeals or anything else.
Yes, that is good. If you refer to additional accountability. Okay, that's good. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions with 3.5?
Okay. This is Aubrey.
All right. So, Aubrey, I think we should know for Work Track 4, these questions have been out here for a long time. So I think we could go through these very quickly, hopefully. But if you want to take it, that'd be great.
3 pages in 8 minutes. I'm willing to try, but okay. I will go through them, but I will not read them as you've been doing, since that takes time. I will go back to the approach I've been using of just indicating the question and asking if there are questions. Does anybody object to my doing it that way? We will go beyond the time a little. I notice some people have already dropped off. But I'll give it a try. Okay. Work Track 4. 4.1, International Domain Names, IDNs. 4.1.1 has to do with one-character IDNs. Any comments on the question? Seeing none. 4.1.2, General Guidance on Flag Issues Regarding Policy Works Regarding IDNs. Question. Seeing none. 4.1.3, Envisioning Policy and Process for Variant TLDs. We had a talk on that. Question related to that. Any comments on that question? Okay. 4.1.4, there was a question on, should the process be coordinated or harmonized with ccTLDs? Oh, no, it's not highlight. Any comments on that one? Okay. The next one has to do with universal acceptance, and that's getting all these names to actually work on the Internet and its equipment. Do you see any issues that warrant policy development is the question. Any comments on that question? No? Okay. Moving on to 4.3. 4.3 has to do with application evaluation, technical evaluation. 4.3.1.1 has to do with technical capability demonstrated at application time or at some other time. Questions on the question? No. 4.3.1.2 has to do with technical evaluation should be per application or per technical infrastructure of an applicant. Okay, no question on the question. 4.3.1.2.1 has to do with if consolidated, should the aggregate requirements be taken into account? And that's if you're doing many, should the scale of your operations be questioned? Any questions on the question? No? Going forward. Financial evaluation, 4.3.2. Is a bit talking about the necessity for financial stability. 4.3.2.1
having financial safeguards in place, should detailed financial information be gathered? 4322. I see no hands. Please stop me if I'm moving too fast at some point. 4322. Has to do with financial capability demonstrated in less detail. Questions on the question? 4323. In prior round, detailed business plans are provided. Question about that. If they were used or should be continued. And how should changes in the plans be dealt with? Questions on the question? No. 4324, for brands and geographic applications supported by governments. Is their business model necessary? If not, what sort of information? Question on the question? On 4325, has to do with ICANN's direct mission and scope of promoting or marketing GTLD expansion. Thus, is it within its mission to evaluate details of proposed business models if financial capability is sufficient? Question on the question. And I see Krista Taylor, am I in a formatting on the line break between 4325/6? Thank you. Any questions on 4325? I see no questions. 4326. Financial capability should be demonstrated application time or demonstrated just before contract. Any questions on the question? No. 4327. Should evaluation be done per application or per registry family? Any questions on the question? I see none. 4328, given international nature and its outreach to less developed areas, is one size fits all financial appropriate? Questions on the question? Nope. General question. 4311, what suggestions do people have for improving the application evaluation process? An open question, hopefully people give us good ideas. 4-4, name collision. And that was a discussion they just recently had. What general guidance for namespace collisions did the community consider? So again, an open question. Question by question. 4-4-2, were there non-applied strings that would fall into high-risk category that you could suggest not allowed? So it's asking for people to guess at what possible collisions may occur in the future. Questions on the question. On 443, based on data first round, controlled interruption period, question. Are there questions on the question? Should it be reduced in the future? 444, should measures be suggested or recorded the TLDs that already ended or will end their emergency readiness after 2 years? Are measures needed for GTLDs delegated prior to the 2012 round? Again, sort of an open question. Are there any questions on the question? Okay. 4-5. Security and stability. Considering 4-5-1, considering that different from the 2012 round, we now have top-level label generation rules. Languages, does the per-label security and stability review still make sense? And 4-5-2, considering that the already published CDAR study and comments to that study, do you have any comments regarding root zone scaling? Any questions on that question? And then there's miscellaneous questions. And there are four of those. The topics above and corresponding questions are all related to the scope of work as determined in this working group charter. Do you feel that all topics must be fully resolved before any subsequent new GTLD procedures can take place? If not, do you believe that there's a critical path? This is basically a question that stems out from the various hurry up and get this done questions that we've been getting from the board and others. So which, and then two, any questions on that question? Two, many in the community have noted the length of time from the close of application submission period to informal projections for the beginning of subsequent new GTLD procedures. Do you have any suggestions on how to contract that time, either now or in the event of future rounds or future procedures? I would suggest we change the word contract so that people don't confuse it with the legal contract. And basically, I just would recommend a small word change. Any questions on that question? Three, do you feel that there are additional issues and subjects the working group should be considering? Any questions on that question? And four, the final question here, I believe, is do you have any suggestions for data points, analyses, studies that might benefit the work of this PDP in any of the work areas? You might want to suggest that suggestions that aren't already covered in the previous question. Any questions on that one? I realize I did a very quick forced march through this. Not something I necessarily would have recommended. I do recommend that if in the next couple hours people do have some clarifying questions on this, that they put them on the email list or on the document. We will, though, before tomorrow's meeting, be doing a fair amount of editing. So, anything to say before I end the meeting? Any other business? Okay. I thank you all for your patience. Tomorrow's meeting is at the same time as today's, and it's scheduled for another 2 hours where we'll go through the changes and just make sure that the way things have been changed are okay. I recommend that we do that meeting very much as we've done this one, so that this last piece, basically stopping on a question, pausing, asking their questions, but not necessarily reading them all. Yes, Caboose, I see your hand.
Yes, thank you very much. I think you and Jeff are tired, maybe some other people. But why we need to have these two consecutive meetings today and tomorrow? Do we have a deadline for the ICANN 58 in Copenhagen, or you don't have the deadline? Because we are very busy to prepare ourselves for that meeting. There are considerable amounts of documents to be read. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We have a 3-hour session that's basically going to once again talk through these questions and focus on some of the particular issues. So we wanted to make sure with two readings that we had basically gone through that process before publishing that for the meeting. So we're really just trying to, and we had discussions on it about trying to move our work forward and basically do our best to have reviewed all the questions before opening them up to the wider community. We're still not going to start the CC2 review until after the meeting, so that there will be time to touch up anything, but that was the reason, so that we've got something that we're fairly confident of going into the Copenhagen discussions. Hopefully that answers the question.
Yes,
we are now
you.
5 minutes
thanks.
Over.
Thanks.
Okay, we're now 5 minutes over, so seeing no other hands, seeing no other questions, I thank you all for your patience and for your participation, and I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Avery. Thank you.
I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Bye.
Bye-bye.